All right, well, another edition of the Hot Hot Host Podcast. I'm your host, Ernest Christian. On the line with me today, I'm really honored. One of my favorite columnists the last couple decades here, Dave Hyde of the Sun Sentinel. Dave, how you doing?
I'm good, Ernest. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm doing very well, man. I really enjoyed your article you just wrote actually on Monday on Hassan Whiteside. And one of the things I got in the piece you wrote was he very, very honest, very honest guy in terms of he holds no punches. And it was evident also by the fact that when they announced the Defensive Player of the Year awards and he came in third. What was your thoughts on that whole thing with the Defensive Player of the Year and whatnot?
Yeah, I'm not surprised he didn't win it. You know, he really came into his own the last half of the season, and while he's known for shot blocking, it's not like he lost a slouch. Kawhi Leonard's a dominant defensive player and a perimeter player, so but as you mentioned, the interesting thing was his reaction, which you know, most guys would have held it in and said, "Oh, you know, that's an honor finish third," as he did. But he talked about being disrespected, and I guess in the short run, maybe this benefits the Heat tonight in Game Two or in this series that. Maybe has a little more motivation or anger, but you know, we'll see where it goes with him. Sometimes he's an interesting guy in that regard.
Yeah. Did you agree with the order with Kawhi being number one? Of course, I thought they got it correct here. Kawhi one, Draymond two, Hassan number three. Given the fact that the league right now is in a different direction, right now it's all perimeter base, whatnot. So I agree with the order. You agreed 100%, right, with the order?
Yeah, I don't really have any problem with it. I mean, if Hassan would play like he did the last half over a full season, then you can talk. But Draymond Green and Kawhi Leonard play on multiple front players. So like when LeBron was here at the end of the game, he would take on the toughest defender. And really, LeBron should have won Defensive Player of the Year one of the years he was here. I think it was his second year.
Yeah.
He was just dominant and played across the board, whoever was the best scorer. So, I don't have any problem with the way the voting went. It was just interesting, Hassan's Whiteside. You know, Hassan's reaction to it.
Right. He's such an enigmatic figure because you got the best quote of all in this piece right at the beginning about him, you know, saying he felt – right at home, being, you know, with all the white, you know, white clad fans out there, and being his name being on Whiteside and all. I mean, his self awareness. He gives no bleeps about it.
Yeah, he's a little goofy in that regard. A little, you know, he shows a good, healthy sense of humor, in a manner that other players are funny too. He just, you could tell he'd been thinking about that line and the whole white hot thing going on with the Heat with fans wearing white sort of tripped his funny bone a little. And so, yeah, he has a sense of humor. So, you know, the issue with the Heat, of course, with him is he a little too goofy at times, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I was going to talk to Dave Hyde of the Sun Sentinel. Follow him on Twitter at Dave Hyde Sports. What did you think about his performance overall against the Hornets in Game 1? His first playoff?
I thought he was dominant. He was, before the game, the Charlotte coach, Steve Clifford, talked about, how they're going to handle Whiteside. And you could tell he was concerned about it. And he was the one player that brought up, and you could see why, you know, Whiteside scored 10 of their first 23 points, had a block. And it seemed like whenever Charlotte's, when he was out of the game, Charlotte could get to the basket, could penetrate. When he was in the game, that shut down quickly. And so, you know, if he can string together a series of games like that, that would be the next step for consistency of effort like that.
Right. Now, obviously, it's early to talk about this kind of stuff right now since we're at the beginning of the playoffs, but do you think, in your opinion, do you think that Whiteside right now is number one priority for Miami in the offseason to re-sign?
Well, I think he has to be. I'd be curious, where Pat Riley goes with this, because you know, for the first couple months of the year, they weren't even playing Whiteside in the fourth quarter, which really told you what Spoelstra thought of him overall. And then the last, you know, few months, his role expanded, and he finally got him back in the starting lineup, which was overdue. So I'm curious. They probably want Durant, no doubt, because Pat Riley's always thinking big like that.
Of course.
But if you're Durant, you're coming here because you would come here, or one of the attractions would be playing with talent, and the most talented guy on the team right now is Whiteside. So, you know, the question would be, do they have the money to sign both of them to max contracts? And that will take some finagling of the cap and probably roster moves.
I want to go another direction right now because Rook 1, Rook 2, I mean, to me, in my opinion, looked very impressive given it was the first, you know, their first time in the playoffs, the first game ever. They just didn't seem fearful in the moment. I'm talking about Justice Winslow, of course, and Josh Richardson. What were your thoughts on the rookies in game one?
Yeah, you got out of them what you were hoping to. You know, pretty much good, steady effort as you got during the season, which is, you know, the fact that they've come on as they have. You know, Winslow was decent from the start. You know, he's pretty steady. He'll improve his shooting, you would think, in the offseason, and that'll be next up. Richardson's just been a revelation, a complete shock. The 40th pick overall in the draft, having a good rookie year, it's just rarely happens that way in the NBA. So, you know, the great thing beyond this year is now they have a bridge to the future. It was, okay, how do they get from a 34-year-old Dwayne Wade and an aging roster to the future? And you can see that now with Whiteside, Winslow, Richardson, Tyler Johnson when he comes back. You know, they have some good youth.
Right. You've been covering sports a very long time. Have you ever seen a guy as young as Winslow so mature?
You know what? Across town they have a similar guy, Aaron Ekblad, the hockey, the Florida Panthers, 20-year-old. And they're similar in the way they carry themselves, and they sound older than they are, and they don't get flustered in games and have this stone-faced appearance. So to have two of them in the same town, very rare to have that level of outward maturity to the games.
Right. I want your opinion on Eric Spoelstra, Miami Heat head coach, because for some weird reason, with all the success we've had in 8 years here, he still seems to be, along the fan base, a very polarizing figure in this market. It's really weird. And I promote this podcast, and especially recent episodes, as a very pro-Spoelstra podcast, because I can't take going on Heat Twitter, you know, and seeing some of the criticisms all the time. What is your opinion on Eric Spoelstra this year and overall in the 8 years as head coach of Miami Heat?
Yeah, I think I agree with you. The rule number one around Heat fans seems to be if they win, it's the players, and if they lose, it's the coach.
Yeah.
No matter, and it's very bizarre to me when you think of some of the things Spoelstra has done. He's the one who unlocked LeBron, really. LeBron was obviously great player, but he was always used as the number three, as the small forward in Cleveland. And Spoelstra really convinced LeBron to play positions 1 through 5 at times in games, which is that was asking something else of LeBron. Really let him out of a box, I thought, and to expand his talents and develop his game. And you think that whole positionless basketball at that time was, when he introduced it, it was kind of head scratching.
Yeah.
And now a lot of teams are doing that. So, that's one example of the other. You know, this year, you know, again, they lost Bosch and they changed the whole manner they play in the middle of the season. So look, you know, in the NBA, the coach is, I guess, only going to get a certain amount of praise, but to me, okay, give him some praise. Don't. I'm a little surprised that it's remained this way. That the criticism's out there for him.
Yeah, and not only that, you touched on the LeBron thing, of course, and the space, the pace and space, the whole nine, because that was all Spoelstra number one. And of course, the turnaround after the All-Star break this year. But even with the player development of Hassan Whiteside and Josh Richardson this year as well. I mean, that's all Spoelstra.
Yeah, player development is telling, and that's sort of the thing we probably don't talk enough about in coaching. We talk about what's in front of us. You know, did he call the timeout right? Did he use this player right? But the player development, you compare that to the Dolphins, one of their problems is they just don't, either they don't have players to develop or they're not developing. It's hard to see. It's probably a combination of both. But then you come to the Heat, and they regularly have players fitting good roles and developing into them. And that gets back to the players. As Spoelstra said, it's a program, and it's not for everybody. So the whole Heat way that Riley and started and Spoelstra now carries on is, it tells why they're a blue ribbon franchise.
Right. Let's talk about game two real quick. The Hornets got blown out, obviously. What do they have to do differently to make this a more competitive game and more competitive series, for that matter, the Hornets?
Well, they got to defend a lot better. They got to, just the start of the game, Luol Deng, for some reason, he was wide open in the corner to start the game. Hit a couple threes, and their whole pick-and-roll defense, which, 75% of the NBA anymore is pick-and-roll. That was awful. And the surprising thing to me was Charlotte is a very good defensive rebounding team, best in the league this year. And the Heat really has its way at times on the offensive board. So it probably just comes down to playing a lot harder than they did in game one. And it's hard to imagine there'd be a blowout like there was in game one again. That, back-to-back, that rarely happens in the NBA. So game two should be a good game.
Despite the blowout in game one, do you see a long series? I mean, including myself, lots of other panelists and analysts had this going probably 6-7 games. Do you still see a long series based on game one?
Yeah, I had it 7 games, and here's the question that's hard to answer. Who are the Heat? Who are the Heat? Are they the Heat of game one? Is that who they are now? Are they the Heat? They played great for a half against Boston, and then they played awful the second half. And I guess I haven't been sold completely on the Heat that they're this that they could look like game one. That's the best of them. Obviously, the question is can they get to that game consistently in the playoffs? And if they are, then they could make this a short series. I predicted the Heat in 7, but I think tonight will be telling.
Is it wrong to say that it's a must-win for the Heat as much as the Hornets tonight? I think it is. Must-win for the Heat.
No, I'm not going there. These series
knee-jerk.
The whole pendulum will swing no matter who wins or loses. If the Heat win, the series is over. If Charlotte wins, telling. Getting to 4 will be interesting. Game 3, if the Heat win tonight, then game 3 and 4, Charlotte's got to win both of those. But there still could be a long way to go here.
Give me a prediction tonight, man. Give me a prediction.
You got to pick the Heat after what you saw in game 1. I'm just not thinking it'll be anywhere near as easy. I think we'll see a legitimate playoff game tonight.
Somewhere in the middle, definitely. Once again, this is Dave Hyde of the Sun Sentinel. Follow me on Twitter at Dave Hyde Sports. Dave, thank you so much for coming on this podcast. I really do appreciate it, man.
All right, Ernest. Take care.
You too. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.